Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, February 19th, 2015. Tonight, I'm going to continue with the pure science aspect of this program, and you have to understand something. I am working up to dealing with the issues around the topic of Planet X, or I should say the many Planet X objects. And, you know, I continue to get these emails, and they're rather comical. You know, and somebody goes, gee, well, I saw this special from NASA, and I don't believe in Planet X. Well, you know, what you're getting is a fairy tale science version of Planet X, and then the distorted image of Planet X topic. It is a very complex topic. And, you know, the story that's been perpetrated on the internet is something like that there was something that roamed through the solar system 3,600 years ago and it's coming back. Well, let me tell you, folks, we have a history of the Earth for the past 3,600 years, a rudimentary history. And the whole issue is that there was an event with Venus, and all of the ancient cultures talk about that, about the comet that came through the solar system, which eventually became the planet Venus. And some people put it around 3,500 years ago. It could have been much longer. I tend to stay away from dates. But let's look at this. If that object was a comet, it became the planet Venus, then it's not out there to come back, is it? You know, so there's all kinds of confusion that's been introduced into this topic. And, you know, it just goes on and on. And so when people go, I don't believe in that, you know, all I can say is based on what? Based on a NASA fairy tale science show? And then here's the problem. Most of the misinformation, which is these people go by, most of the bad information comes from nutcases that are supported by NASA and the government and the misinformation crowd to basically infiltrate this topic and make it into a crazy topic. Then the NASA white hats come riding in and tell you that it's wrong. So you get this distorted view on both sides of the coin. So if that's the extent of somebody's research into this topic, then I really, you know, I can't help them. I produce my material. There's a ton of material on my webpage, my books, etc. And so if somebody looks at that minimal amount of information and makes a decision, well, whatever. You know, and a lot of people, their biggest worry is it going to come this year? You know, is it going to come in 2015. But anyway, the series of lectures that I'm giving now dealing with electrical conditions in the solar system, I'm leading up to discussing some Planet X type topics. So of which you have to read my book also, Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes, plus the other ones. You have to put all of this into perspective. And so, the people want to put a minimal amount of time in on this. I want them to go away and not waste their time because they're not going to put valuable time into this topic. So at any rate, let me move on here. A couple topics that I did not include in last week's show, the Mars rovers. Now, this whole topic of robots, let's talk about robots first. Robotic, insects, all kinds of devices that can tremendously mobile and efficient, and they have cameras, gliders with cameras, hot air balloons, you name it. Now, do you think, and I want you to just think about this, do you think that those little Mars rover creatures that they have on Mars sending some pictures back every now and then, do you think that's the best that we have to send to Mars or any place? And the answer is no. Not at all. I just want to mention that Google, who has put $1 billion with Fidelity Investments into SpaceX, also put a lot of money, I forget it was a couple hundred million dollars, purchasing a company called Boston Dynamics. Now, you can look this up on the internet. Boston, like the city, that's getting dumped on tremendous amounts of snow these days. Boston Dynamics, look that up. Google purchased that company in 2014. And now, what is Google, the search engine company, doing buying a robot company? Now, what they make are dogs and other big dog-like robots. Yeah, they're capable of all kinds of things. They're capable of carrying cameras. They're capable of carrying arms. They're capable of breaking into your house. They tout that they will not fall over when kicked or molested, etc. Now, what is Google doing buying a company that builds robots and investing heavily in outer space? They're invested heavily in photography from outer space and have been for a long time. They just introduced a new product where you can basically, on your computer, fly around the Earth. Pick a place, any place on Earth. And the way they get this data is by flying cameras, many, many cameras. And this is something that the security agencies are doing. They have cameras with dozens and dozens, actually, of very high-resolution cameras that are pointed in an array to cover an area not only downwards but out to the sides. They can put this data together. They can follow people. They can track people for days and weeks at a time. If all of a sudden your number comes up and they go, hey, we want to know what this guy is doing, and go back weeks and weeks and weeks, they can go back into their data file and track that person day and night. So at any rate, this is now going back to Mars. Do you think that those stupid little rovers that are got tracks and they're going around Mars, do you think that's the best that they could send up to Mars? And the answer is no. So they have much better equipment at the moon, on Mars. There's an entire space program going on, and now we have Google invested in SpaceX, which is heavily linked with the military now. So we've got a problem, folks. We have, and by the way, I put a posting on my webpage, a very well-written article, and it deals with the history of Google, Facebook, Twitter, social media, the Wikipedia, on and on and on. Going back to the ownership by the CIA, which is the police force of the World Bank. Now, isn't it convenient that they just happen to have a database, which, gee, all these people are just contributing to every day, Facebook, Twitter, etc., and putting all of this information, personal information about them and their friends and pictures and into these databases that's controlled by the IRS. Let me explain that, too. I meant the CIA, but the IRS purchased from Facebook their entire database and are using it. Then when they determined that that purchase was illegal, do you think they gave it back? Of course not. So at any rate, just a little aside note. Also, just as long as I'm talking about SpaceX, the SpaceX Falcon rocket exploded a number of weeks ago as it attempted a soft landing on a launch pad, on a receptor pad that floats on the ocean, and it had an X on it, and they were going to try and reuse their rocket. But the thing explodes in a massive explosion. Doggone, those rockets are just exploding all over the place from those private space programs. But now that Elon Musk and company, SpaceX, has signed an agreement, settled their agreement with the Air Force, I bet they probably won't have as many explosions in SpaceX anymore. Although the other companies, Virgin Galactic and Space Sciences, also had explosions. Now, catastrophic explosions means that the tanks were breached that hold the fuel. And so what can do that? Gee, maybe a little laser action from some of those military satellites, or who knows, you know. But just a strange event there. Also, I think I mentioned last week, but the newer Samsung TVs are known to be recording what people say and then send that off to a network. And when you buy the TV, you agree to have that. But just about everything, whether it's a program you download on the internet, smartphones, cell phones, any cell phone today needs a link to some type of upload where all of your information and data is uploaded. And apparently people like this, but they don't understand that they're basically giving all their information away. At the end of last week's show, I quick mentioned that new firewalls, the next generation, they're starting to advertise these. It's just a joke. These things, believe me, anybody that's got a product that they're selling already has the hooks for the NSA in it, and they're not going to be able to sell it without that. So don't let anybody sell you a bill of goods that somehow they have a firewall that's immune to everything. I think it's funny that Google, on their search engine, has this promotion like they're really going to protect you. I just saw a web page that was a subsidiary, InQtel, InQtel. It's a finance venture capital fund for high-tech companies. They funded over 600 companies and stolen how many other ideas from how many other companies without giving them a dime. But this is the investment arm of the CIA. Now, people, the CIA is not there to protect you or your rights or anything else. This is the police force of the World Bank. And they're there to sequester information on everybody and everything and manage the world and keep it in chaos. Someone asked me this week what I think about ISIS. I said, well, it's the same as Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and Osama bin Laden and the whole laundry list of Mideast terrorists, Saddam Hussein, all of these were CIA plants and trainees. Noriega down there in Central America with the cocaine business. Now we find out, and this was just a little something that a listener sent in this week, which I investigated and found out to be true, that Afghanistan, it turns out, has a vast reserve of lithium, something that's needed for batteries, for the battery industry. Everything is lithium-ion batteries. So lithium is a high commodity mineral found extensively in Afghanistan. And so when the U.S. Army was in there displacing entire cities and towns, moving the people off the land, blowing up mountaintops with U.S. military, you know, what are they blowing up all this rock for? Well, the geologists had to get in there to examine the deposits and find out where the lithium is so they can go in and mine it. I'll be very frank about any venture capital groups. A lot of engineers get their design work ripped off by the military, U.S. military, by venture capital groups, and by this one, especially the CIA, InQtel, which is the, like I say, the venture capital investment firm of the CIA, and they have this write-up on their webpage like, oh boy, we're going to make you rich, kid, with your swell idea. But at the very fine print at the bottom, they say, nothing is proprietary information. They don't honor any proprietary information at all. In other words, if you submit something to them, it's theirs. They can run it through their own company, create their own companies, do whatever they want, and you have no recourse. That's in the fine print at the bottom. So anyway, just a little story there. But back to the Mars rovers, do you really think that that's the best technology they send to Mars? No, the answer is no. So anyway, on with the rest of this show. And just another note, I've stated before that don't use Google as a search engine. There are web pages that filter you and your information from Google. One of those pages, it's called startingpage.com. Startingpage, two words together, .com. And so, yeah, don't use Google because it's really, really a mess out there, information mess. A quick note here, I saw an article. It said that, and this is false reporting, they said in 2014, 3,000 plus people dumped their U.S. passports, went expatriate, and that's compared to 100, and there was 150 times more this year in 2014, this past year, than in the year 2008. 150 times more. And so they're saying that this is a big increase, but I have some private contacts that work in that industry that the number is actually more like 55,000. And the primary reason is the draconian tax laws in the U.S. that people simply cannot function, and they for sure cannot function in foreign countries. Now that TAFTA, some kind of law that requires reporting of foreign banks in the U.S. Foreign banks have simply shut off any American bank accounts or anything to do with the United States. So the United States has basically shot itself in the foot. This is a little Obama policy, but remember that he is just the middleman for the world bankers. But they want to have control over anybody with an American passport living outside the country. But this 55,000 does not count the people who have just left. It's like, you know, that's the official number. That's the number of people who have actually registered and gone through the red tape and paid the fines and everything else to expatriate. That doesn't count the people who have simply just left and just won't ever come back. But a little quick note here on the logic or illogical forced vaccinations. Now, if people get the vaccine and they believe so much in the vaccine, then they should be immune and they shouldn't worry about who got vaccinated and who didn't. And if the vaccines, they have that much confidence in the vaccine, you know, what's the big problem? Why force other people to get a vaccine? Because in the true sense, if the vaccine works, then you shouldn't have a problem, and all those other people, if they get sick, that's their problem. You know, why would you get a vaccine and then be worried about the people who didn't get a vaccine unless the vaccine didn't work? It turns out that in the case of measles, the majority of people that die from measles are the ones that had the vaccine. And so it's a way of injecting a disease, a live virus, into the community. But people are too stupid to realize this. In fact, the method of quarantining is the old-fashioned way, and it's the only way to really deal with a situation like this. If people want to get vaccines, well, that's swell. But there are a lot of other factors. And like this Dr. Grupka joker that works for CNN, what a paid liar. I mean, that's all I can say. The guy makes a lot of money being a staff writer for CNN, Candy Nugget News. And he's saying this is purely scientific. They love to use that purely scientific, you know, proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. It's just baloney. This is garbage put out by the pharmaceutical interests. Okay, on to some science here, and this is related to, this is a very interesting story. Titan flew out of Saturn's magnetosphere, which is controlled magnetically, the region controlled by Saturn's magnetic field, and it is ripe with charged particles, high-energy charged particles. So for the first time, as a Cassini mission, the satellite orbiting Saturn, flew by Titan while it was out in the solar wind away from Saturn, out in front of Saturn, to the sunward side. And so very interesting. Now in the article, on the GWhiz articles where they talked about this, they said they were surprised. Now, gee, I bet I wouldn't be surprised, but they're comparing it to comets. Now, could it be that they observed high energy, like X-rays or ultraviolet light to the sunward side of Titan, acting just like a comet in the solar wind, in the discharge of the solar capacitor? Because remember, in the region of Saturn, you have a very significant discharge that's already set up. So it's not just the pure solar wind that they're dealing with. You're also dealing with the electron beam that's already there coming from the sunward side. So a lot of, now, like I say, they were very surprised, but they did not release any real data. And once again, this is so typical of NASA. They get something, they don't understand what's going on, and they hide the data. They don't really say anything about it. All they say is, oh boy, we're really going to learn a lot. Well, what they have to do is take time to fudge the data, to mold it, put a square peg in a round hole, and try and mold it into their all the planets formed from a nebula 4.5 billion years ago. So anyway, that's very interesting. I'm trying to do a bit more research on this to determine what exactly they measured. But here, let me predict what they see, what they saw. They saw all of a sudden, because Titan broke out into the solar wind, they would have seen the electric discharge of the solar capacitor. Like I say, this already has a significant electron beam because Saturn itself is discharging the solar capacitor. So Titan would have picked that up immediately, much enhanced. So it isn't like Titan was just all by itself out in the solar wind. That would be a different scenario, a very different scenario. Also, they probably saw an influx of material. They may have even seen it connect electrically to Saturn. And that's probably why they're not saying anything, because that would have been a pass-through, the electrical discharge out in front that is already there, enhanced by the presence of Titan, and then all of a sudden passing that back all the way back into Saturn. So these are the type of plasma scenarios that they would have seen, and of course not understanding what the data says. On to another topic, Mars in the news this week. And here again, we have a situation. Mars is a planet with an atmosphere. Titan, by the way, has an atmosphere. Titan is the biggest moon of Saturn that I was just talking about. But Mars is all by itself. It has two little asteroidal moons, which really don't amount to much. Does not have a magnetic field. But a number of years ago, I believe this phenomenon was first observed in 2012. An amateur astronomer noticed kind of a bump, kind of like a pimple on the side of Mars in one of his photos, and he said he thought it was like an aberration, a photographic aberration. And then when went back to look at the data again, other people had reported seeing the same thing. So there turns out there is some kind of plume on the side of Mars. Some kind of a plume, like a protrusion sticking off of the side of Mars. And so at any rate, I have a book called my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather, and I show how these plumes form. And it looks, in the picture in my book, it looks like a kind of like a leech, you might call it, like a conical shaped leech attaching to the upper atmosphere of a planet. That then is part of the overall electric current, and that passes down through the atmosphere to the surface, and this is what drives hurricanes and tornadoes, etc. It's actually an electrical connection through the ionosphere of the planet and out into outer space. With that, those electrical connections all the way down to the surface of the planet would ionize the region around the surface of the planet, the dust, etc. Then it would start moving up the column, and as it does, it starts to spin. And so basically you have a large dust devil that extends up in, well up into the atmosphere. And they're saying about 200 kilometers. So this is 100 kilometers higher than the upper atmosphere of Mars. They're talking about auroras, the two standard explanations that come out. One is that it could be an aurora. Well, gee, it's not at the north or south pole of Mars. Mars doesn't even have a magnetic field. And Mars has very minimal auroras. And this is off, like, to the side of the planet, not at the poles. Secondly, they're saying that it could be dust in the atmosphere, which obviously it is, but they don't know how this dust could get up to be 200 kilometers, a full 100 kilometers above the atmosphere. Now, there's no process for dealing with this at all in standard science. So once again, if you look in my weather book, and I don't have a copy in front of me here, I wish I did, but look in my weather book where I deal with the electrical conditions around planets, and there's many diagrams. I'm pretty sure it's in the weather book, but I know it's in one of my books, and that shows it's like a comet tail that comes in and attaches up to the upper atmosphere. Many people emailed that story, so that's one that I certainly wanted to cover. But like I said, that's very predictable. Now, let's talk about another event in history where that type of event happened on Earth, and it was observed. When Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, remember that the swirling pillar of fire that reached up into the sky, and it actually stood between them for a full day and night, between the Egyptian armies that were pursuing them, and they had their backs up against the Red Sea. And so the story is that the Red Sea parted, which was part of the gravitational wave. This is all happening as Venus the comet is passing by Earth. The water of the sea spreads apart. Due to the gravitational wave, they run across the base of the inlet there, and then as they get across, the oceans come back on top of Pharaoh's armies, and people think, "Wow, that's too fantastic a story. That's just a mythology or somebody making something up." They found the chariots in the Red Sea, right where they were supposed to be. They found Pharaoh's chariots. And they don't like to talk about that too much because these are topics that have been kind of squelched from Christian traditions. Because, you know, when you have to start answering questions, how did this happen, then you come back to, gee, you know, something happened here. Something physical happened to Earth. And so that's what happened. And that plume, by the way, the pillar of fire that extended up into the heavens, was the electrical discharge between Venus and Earth, and probably one of many as it passed by. And so this was during the heat of the action. and remember the seven plagues, all of those, as I, on my two CD set, The Physics of Ancient Celestial Disasters, I talk about these disasters, these the seven plagues that hit Egypt. Now, I'm sure that if you could get to Mars and measure the conditions in that plume, that you would find out that, in fact, it's very interesting that they do have equipment around Mars now, about five orbiters, in fact, that they would be able to detect electrical conditions, etc., and get some better data. But, of course, all they're doing is saying, oh, some amateur took a picture over here. And from an Earth-based amateur telescope, and that's the best data that's going to be released to you, the public. When, in fact, they have real data in situ at the site on Mars, in orbiting Mars, and they have real data, and that's not being released to the public. But that's the reason why, because they can't admit to all of the activity that's going on. Along that same vein, a long time ago, when they first started taking pictures of Mars with satellites, I collected the pictures and the data, etc., and in particular of Olympus Mons, the big volcano. It is so tall that it extends out of the atmosphere of Mars, but it's gigantic when you compare it to mountains on Earth, etc. I believe I have a picture on my webpage. Picture of the day, go down there and you'll see the comparison of Olympus Mons. And the pictures they had then, of course, the cameras were not as good as they have today, but the pictures showed extensive river activity and erosion on Olympus Mons. I still have those pictures. The modern pictures with much better equipment have all of those photoshopped out. They don't show the erosion in the rivers, etc., on Olympus Mons, the big volcano on Mars. And so it's really strange to see that kind of data that's being passed off to the public is photoshopped before it's released, because a lot of people would go, well, gee, look at all the rivers here. I have pictures of riverbeds, pristine riverbeds on Mars, and you look at the same place now on the new modern photos, and they're simply not there. So were they eroded away that quickly, or are they photoshopping all of this data? Well, it might be a little bit of both, but that's one thing I've always said, is that Mars is a target for NASA. They want to go up and find where the water went, and they're saying, oh, it was billions of years ago that the water left. Yet you have all of this recent water erosion activity on Mars, but there isn't any water. It's all gone. There's no atmosphere. And they have tremendous dust storms that occur annually on Mars. Go to the pictures of the day photos on my webpage, and you'll see a whole bunch of Mars pictures showing the erosion. I took a couple of weeks and concentrated on that particular topic. The Pictures of the Day subpage. And you can see the tremendous amount of water activity. Well, that wouldn't be there for billions of years. That would all be eroded away with the tremendous dust storms. And I have some pictures of some dust storms, pictures taken from outer space of dust storms on Mars, and they're immense. They cover like an area the size of the United States. Just tremendous dust storms. And so, at any rate, I want to jump on to some other topics here. But going back, just to reiterate, on the plume on Mars, very clearly electrical activity connecting to the electrical atmosphere outside of Mars. And that's it. That's what's causing that. And, of course, standard science doesn't have a clue. I saw a History Channel special this past week, and it talked about the southern coast of Africa, and they went back in history. They talked about the slave trade, the first Portuguese arriving, and then they talked about civilizations that lived there and estimated 150,000 years ago, And they made a statement in it. It was, to me, it's just like, oh, brother, this is just so unbelievable. I mean, literally not to be believed, let me put it that way. They said that possibly within the last 100,000 years, the entire population of the Earth was reduced down to about 6,000, all of them living in southern Africa, and that the entire population of the Earth is descended from them. Now, I'm just shaking my head, and I've always said that the two major events in man's recent history, the Noah's flood and the Moses event, when Venus the comet came by Earth on two different occasions, the Mayan talk about it, Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god of the night sky, whose heart became the planet Venus. They do not, these young sprite PhD candidates or whatever they are out there in the field, are well taught in the topics of standard science, and they repeat them, they go by these. But it's really unfortunate that they, you know, the two major events in history that shaped modern man's history. But the point that you have to make is that prior to those, and just prior to those events, one, the Great Flood, probably happened within the last 6,000 years. The Venus event, maybe around 3,500 to 4,000 years ago. There were a number of thousands of years of time that lapsed between the Noah's Flood and the Moses event. The Venus event. And so, you know, to eliminate those major events and then eliminate the fact that the Earth had tremendous population prior to the Noah's flood, and those people, you know, the majority of the Earth died in that flood. So, at any rate, and then to say that the entire Earth population is descended from black people, the fairy tale science is all you can say. It doesn't make any sense at all. And the unfortunate problem is, like much of astrophysics and space science, they don't really have enough information to make a informed decision on what happened. So they just make something up, rubber stamp, approve it, and then that's the gospel story. This, 2 weeks ago, I announced that I would have a new course up, a new university-level coursework in astronomy, astrophysics, and space science. And it seems like somebody somewhere just doesn't want me to post that. So I've been hacked. I've been had trouble with every aspect of my computer systems, etc. And this happened, remember, during the release of my Diamond Principle book. Oh my goodness, that was the most incredible hacking that I took one of the computers, that I have online. This was during the release of the Diamond Principle. I took it to people who were specialists in removing viruses, etc. They found over 105 different viruses in that computer. And I talked to the guy about, he says, I've never seen anything like this. He said, these are all military-grade viruses in your computer, and it took them a week to rebuild that computer. That's how extensive it was. They hacked my server on my web page resides, and the people there helped restore that, but they had a lot of problems. Going in, they had viruses that infected their server, but primarily my web page. So it's very clear that I was the one being targeted there. And remember that actually that book, after it was released, I did a release program on Coast to Coast, and they invited a guy, and of course the invitation was put by the people who run that show. Not by the people who, not by Nori or by the producers there, but to try and negate everything I was saying. They released a book claiming it was authored by Stephen Hawking to say exactly the opposite of what I was saying. Excuse me. And of course, in my Diamond Principle book, I claimed that there was a divine creator, or there was a master plan of the universe. And then they came out with a book that said Stephen Hawking said that we don't need God, science doesn't need a God, complete atheist propaganda. And the last known book of Stephen Hawking's that he literally wrote himself stated the very last thing he said in the book was exactly what I was saying, is that the universe shows a design, an intricate, very complicated design, and that it was designed by someone very powerful, of which we don't have information, and that the best, most fantastic thing we could find in science is a relationship to the Creator. That's what Stephen Hawking said when he wrote the book. Years later, when he was totally incapacitated, they claimed that there's only one guy that can talk to him, can communicate with him, and that's the guy that wrote this book. So, anyway, yeah, and that was during the release of my the Diamond Principle book, which, of course, was, like all my books, has been very successful. But this release, clearly somebody does not want me posting my work and dealing with high-level astronomy, astrophysics, and space science. And the thing is, I present this in a way that you can understand. But at any rate, I'm having some problems getting that course up there. As soon as it is available, I will be posting the link to purchase that on my webpage. And hopefully that will be in the next day or two, but just keep posted. Along with that, I was not able to attend my weekly interview with John Moore. My internet had been blocked, so I couldn't be on the John Moore show Wednesday morning. At any rate, fun and games. This is pretty standard fare when I release something. A lot of activity to prevent it. And I can understand why they don't want me putting out high-level. This is university-level astronomy, astrophysics, and space science in a manner that you can present. The baloney that they put out is like the Cosmos series. Fairy tale science with a lot of pudding and sugar mixed in. A lot of fluff and a lot of gee-whiz statements, but with no meat. What I'm putting out is real astrophysics, astronomy, space science, college-level physics in a manner that people can understand. Wow, is that ever something they do not want people to see? So anyway, enough of that. When that gets available and up on the page and stable, clearly all the hacking that I've been under in the last 2 weeks here, and all of the basically attacks, computer cyber attacks, etc., has been at attempting to find those courses so they can, whoever knows, you know, build their information, misinformation campaigns around that. So at any rate, now I'm going to go into a topic. People still do not understand this concept of not being able to measure, or being very difficult to measure, voltages in outer space. People just don't understand this concept. Let me start out with the definition of voltage. And most people are familiar with a battery, just like the battery you put in your flashlight or your car battery or whatever. It has two poles. It has a plus and a minus pole. And we could call it 1, 2, or A, B, or whatever you want to call it. They're two different points. And in fact, even within physics, there has been controversy over calling things positive and negative, etc., but there is a standard that's been decided upon. But, okay, so we have a voltage. Your car battery typically is 12 volts. A truck battery might be a 48-volt, much bigger, more powerful battery. And so there's other aspects to the battery, how much power is stored in that battery. But if the battery is just sitting on the table, it has an internal resistance, so it's very slowly discharging internally. A lot of people don't know that. That's why you cannot leave a battery sit for months and months at a time, because when you come back, it's going to be dead. And you think, well, gee, not it hasn't been running any loads. There's no lights or radios or anything running off it. Why is the battery dead? Well, that's because it has internal resistance, and the battery is literally running and discharging. It's a high resistance, but it's there. Okay, but apart from that, just let's say your battery is good, it's fresh, it's charged up, and you have a 12-volt battery. Now, what does that mean? That means that from point one of the terminals, one of the posts on your battery to the other post, if you put on a voltage meter, you put one lead on one of them and the other lead on the other one, you would measure a 12 on your meter, 12 volts. It probably, if it's fully charged, it would be more like 13.5 volts. And these are made up of individual liquid battery cells that are hooked together in series to make up 12 volts, approximately 12 volts. Your flashlight battery is 1.5 volts. That's pretty standard. So if you took your voltage meter, you put the red lead on the positive side, you put the black lead of your voltage meter on the negative side of the battery, it would flip up and measure 1.5. That is voltage. Voltage is defined between two points. Now, when we talk about electricity in your house, you say, well, that's 120 volt AC. Well, really, it's 115 volts more typically, and that's a measurement of the alternating, the height of the alternating current that comes out of the wall plug. Basically, once again, now that's alternating, and so if you took an oscilloscope and measured the voltage with respect to time, it would have a 60 cycle per second frequency, and it would go up and down, and you could measure the voltage. You could then rectify that voltage and make it into a DC voltage, etc. Your computers, for example, have a transformer and a rectifier, and you're running off of a DC voltage on your computers. They run on DC voltage. The point is that if you're measuring voltage, it's between two points. Now, on the wall socket, you have two little flat leads and then a ground lead. It's more like a round lead that goes into the wall socket. And the European version is a little bit different. But at any rate, the voltage, 120 volts, is between those two flat pins, 120 volts, and it goes up and down and alternates. Okay, voltage, very simply, is the measurement of electrical potential between two points. Now, last week, I went through a whole long topic dealing with shielding. Now, when you have your electric wire come to your computer or to the lights in your house, you have two wires. They're separated by shielding, by rubber in many cases, and sometimes you even have a shielding of woven wire, as in the case of coaxial cable. But at any rate, the FCC has a long list of requirements if anyone builds a computer, radio, whatever, that have to pass certain requirements so you don't emit any radio frequency noise from your electronic device. Remember that last week when I was talking about shielding, I said that gravity, there's no way to shield gravity. Gravity works through electric shielding, whatever other kind of deterrent you put up there. Gravity works through everything. So it's a very different force. Some people try and say, oh, gravity is a form of electrical, electromagnetic interaction. Well, let me tell you, the best physicists in the planet have worked on this problem, including Einstein, looking for the combination or the understanding of these fields, and nobody to date has either put forth theoretical work, but then you have to verify it with experiment, and believe me, that doesn't exist. But the main thing, some of the main things you would have to explain is how gravity works through everything without shielding. Electricity is shielded from, for example, our ionosphere. In fact, the radio signals that you're listening to on shortwave on this radio show bounce off the ionosphere. It's a form of shielding. So at any rate, just going back to the concept of voltage, voltage is the measurement of electrical potential difference between two points. Okay, so the question comes back to, how do you measure voltage with a single spacecraft? The answer is you don't. So any Yahoo, clown, imposter, PhD, NASA scientist, whoever you want to talk to, that claims they have measured the potential, the voltage in outer space, and say it's electrically neutral, they don't know what they're talking about. Because physics 101, basic physics, which they probably long forgot when they were studying about dirty snowball comets, which is totally fairy tale science. The basic physics is that to measure a voltage and a potential difference in outer space, you need special techniques. But you can measure the effects of these very nicely. You can measure the X-rays to the sunward side of a comet. And for example, Titan, I guarantee you, if they had their spacecraft trained with the X-ray sensors on Titan as it moved out of the confines of the magnetosphere of Saturn, that they would have seen X-ray activity, more than likely, or for certain, ultraviolet light, very intense ultraviolet light, far out to the sunward side. And without any understanding or explanation of why such a thing should happen, even though they were observing this. So what happened is this week I got quite a few listener emails suggesting certain things about electricity in outer space. But the reality is now let me give an example of the type of detector you could build. Let's take basically an insulator, something that has a high resistivity, and put two metal balls on the end of it. This is basically the same thing as a voltmeter. And move those points, those test points, far out from one another. Basically, it's the same principle as a voltmeter. But here's the real problem with measuring voltages in outer space. They're extremely small. And over the span of, say, a million miles, you might have, say a million volts or something like that, 100,000 volts. Remember that outer space is electrically conductive. There's no resistance there. So if you have charges in outer space, they're going to move very quickly. There's even a wire, even a copper wire, has resistance. But the situation in outer space, it's very difficult to monitor, but there's other things you can do to prove that electric field is there. For example, you could take an inert object, doesn't have to be metal or whatever, just a rock or a pebble or a golf ball or a planet, whatever, and send it through, or a comet nucleus, send it through the electric field in a way that passes through the gradient of the change of the electric field. And by doing so, you're going to discharge that capacitor and initiate electrical currents. In that way, you can determine, get an estimate for the electrical voltages in outer space. And so by seeing that, and in fact, when you see a comet, you see the discharge of the solar capacitor, it's proof that there is an electric field. But if you are a space scientist working for NASA or the European Space Agency, and you claim you have measured the neutrality of outer space with a single spacecraft, you don't know what you're talking about. You've forgotten physics 101, basic electromagnetism. You know, and the problem is then this becomes very difficult for the average person on the street to understand. If you're going to understand the issues of Planet X types of objects, one of the things you have to understand is electromagnetism and how these things work in outer space. Now, one final note. There are clowns running around the internet that claim that there are planets flying around the solar system, that Saturn was by Earth, and then it just went flying out by where it is now. You know, things like this are just foolishness. And so they don't understand electricity. They try and use the idea that an electron and a proton would have extremely strong forces, which they do. But they don't understand shielding. They don't understand how currents work. They talk about currents just flowing through outer space freely. Well, that's all wonderful, but the actuality is that anything that happens with gravity, etc., the reality is that, first of all, gravity is the dominant force in the solar system. Electric and magnetic forces are shielded. So you have to understand how all of this works before you start spouting out electric universe type of concepts. And so they have done much more damage to the idea of electric universe than any good that could have possibly happened. But when you see a comet, you're actually seeing the discharge of the solar capacitor. It's not dependent on the nucleus so much it is on the discharge itself. And I talk about this in my very earliest work in the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, etc. So once again, you have to understand these concepts. So how can a comet discharge to Earth and create the swirling planetary electrical discharge seen by Moses, or the Martian dust field, raised dust field? How does that work? You have to understand the discharge of the solar capacitor and how that works. Once again, I'm out of time here. I'll be returning next week, and watch for the posting of my first university level class. It should be coming up as soon as I can get by the hack attack that's been going on just ferociously trying to keep me from getting this posted and distributed to you, the public. Remember, the webpage is jmccsci.com. It is redesigned. Go there. There's a tremendous amount of information, and I've been blocked from actually getting to my own webpage for the last about week and a half. I've only had spurious contact there. But I should be able to get over this very soon. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.